Brisbane, Australia. This is episode 128 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40k experience. I'm Denith, and today we're joined by Luke. How you doing, mate?
Hey, good day. It's good to be here.
And big dog Nathan himself. How you going?
Good evening, boys. How are we going?
Oh, good. Well, it is the most active time of teams 40k in Australia. It's the 2 weeks between ANZTC list submission and the actual ANZTC. And I'm pumped. How are you feeling, Nathan?
Absolutely excellent, man. I feel like the chat's been thrown all around the country at unforeseen rates these last couple of days.
Yes, the memes have begun. Everyone's screen time is up 200%. We are on XL when we are never normally on XL. It's a great time. So, Luke, you're on the sidelines this year, watching as a spectator. How's uni going for you? You got exams coming up?
Yeah, exams in 4 weeks, but never mind that. I've been paying close attention to all this ATC stuff. Always interesting time to see what people are doing in the new meta.
Yeah, and look, today on the show, we'll be having a look at the teams and the lists, and going through some of the cool lists that we found in the, I guess, in the release once they were out, Saturday? So just about 3-4 days ago. But for those who don't know, ANZTC is probably the premier team event on the calendar in Australia. So it's based off the WTC, where each state or territory sends 8 players, and they use the WTC pairings and scoring and terrain format. And one thing that this shows in terms of the lists, I guess, is, as we've talked about in the past, teams lists are very, very different to singles lists. So we'll see some really interesting stuff and talk about some stuff that we might not see in the classic, you know, ITC or, you know, Meta Watch or Meta Monday stuff on lists. We'll see some intricate stuff. But we'll also see what some of the top players in each state are thinking on their faction choices and their tech choices in the list. So this year, me and Nathan are on the Queensland Mercs team as the little vanguard running around for the Queensland team, bonking some skulls. So, you know, hopefully we do okay. We got Nathan on the Necrons, hey?
Yeah, super exciting. I think, as I mentioned on a podcast a little while ago, my venture into CSM ended in a little bit of tragedy. So it was good going back to my roots with Crons this last little while. And certainly, as usual, Liam Hackett, although he's on his holiday, certainly led the way with his build there. So I've gone something relatively similar. So pretty excited to run the Crons. And you yourself, Denith, back on the Farsight Tower?
Yes, welcome home. We actually never left, but yeah, on the Farsight Tower, it's a good time. Got my little indirect commander, got Farsight himself that I need to rebase and model up, because I probably can't get an actual Farsight model between now and ATC. but yeah, it's been a good trot. I played 3 games today, and it was a good test, and had a little RTT actually all around Brisbane. It was a good time, and the coolest bit I think about this part is getting your matchup data, figuring out how the pairing is going to work, getting the spreadsheet cranking. Oh, it's just good. It just tickles my OCD addiction, eh?
Absolutely love a bit of spreadsheet time. You know, I'm an accountant, so I have to do it anyway, but this is probably the funnest type of spreadsheet I get to get involved with.
Luke, do you have fond memories of the ATC pairings process, or were you just getting reds all day, mate?
Oh, mate, ATC pairings process is the funnest part of all teams events. And there's always a hidden gem in the lists when you open them up, or the captain opens them up and goes, what does blue mean? What, you know, it's red, yellow, green. What the hell's blue? What's purple?
You know? So Denith definitely sprung the purple on me the other day, and I opened the Excel spreadsheet. Yeah. And I'm like, what the fuck is purple, Denith?
I'll come to that in a moment, but I have very fond memories of Luke playing in 2019 for Queensland, and just Eric just constantly sending him to the shit, being like, I'm sorry, man, you got another bad one, you got another red. And then Luke just out of nowhere bringing back wins. I don't think I've ever seen you work that hard, bro.
It was fun. It was back the old Ultramarines when no one knew what the hell the list did. So that was the strength of that one. And hopefully we see some of that in this list review. We'll see some lists, you know, that people haven't seen before.
Yeah, and funny story, Nate. You want to cover the purple on our pairing spreadsheet?
Yeah, I think I think you used it to cover basically a flip matchup,
mm-hmm.
Which you know, like it wasn't necessarily on what we had before, but you know, I think we've sort of taken to watching a lot of like different content and taken in what we've done in 4-5 men, and obviously your guys' experience in 8 men's before. I think there's so many different ways people do pairings, and so many different sort of insights and ways people like to do things. So I think it's definitely, we're all sort of a product of everything that we've watched and seen. And I think I was just watching some of the stat check into the Matrix stuff today, which was, you know, interesting to see how some of the Europeans do their stuff.
Mm, yeah. So if anyone gets a little cheat peek of our little Merc pairings spreadsheet, you see some weird purple in there. A lot of it will be like on the Denith row. Just ignore that. Don't worry about that. But,
you don't want to hold yourself to reliable data, do you, Denis?
Well, that's it. You know, if I just put it as a flip, it could be a 2, it could be a 19. Who knows? No pressure on me, right? I shouldn't say that. That's a horrific way to approach teams. But, yeah, I guess on that note, we'll dive straight into the list, say. Nathan, do you want to take us away with a pick of the list? Who are you going to start with?
Absolutely. I might start with one diamond in the rough, a unique list, given no one else is running this faction throughout ATC. We're going to go with Victoria's Chaos Space Marine list, being run by Dean Sinbeck. Now, it's actually a very similar build to something he's been running sort of all arc season. He's running the Black Legion. He's got a Abaddon, the Despoiler, up top, of course. Dark Apostle with the Obsec Aura, with Cloak of Conquest, Mark of Slaanesh for the advance and charge on either Abaddon or the infamous Terminator Brick. He's got a Master of Possessions with the extra cast. He's got Terminator Sorcerer with the Veilbreaker Plate, effectively the CSM Veil of Darkness. He's got a few cultist mobs. He's got the big Terminator squad. He's got his dreads that he's been running all season, so double Decimator and double Hellboot, and then a Venom Crawler and Raptors just to get some mission play and extra psychic boost done. So I think this is a really cool addition to Team's list. I think CSM has definitely fallen by the wayside for a lot of people, so I don't think it was on many people's radar for ATC. But, you know, this list, as we've seen from Dean running it, at Adelaide and throughout the season, I think it's something that can throw the pressure valve on. It's got a Abaddon on there for wound caps, which is really great into some pieces in the meta at the moment. And then those dreads, which lay down a lot of hurt between the soul burners on the decimators and the hell brutes being sort of cheeky, cheap dudes running around with multi-melters. So, and really, like, that all escorts that dangerous character break up. So, you know, I think it's got an interesting role that'll play in their team, so I'm keen to see sort of how they use the list and in their pairings.
Yeah, Nath, I remember when we put the similar kind of thing on the table at yours and we were playing it with a couple of Desis, and, like, the one thing I found playing against it is it's got so many, like, little elements that you just can't ignore. Like, you kind of think of it going, oh, it's the big brick of Termes, we could fight around it, and then you just ignore the Termes or something else hits you or shoots you really hard. So there's a lot of threat just in weird hidden places in this list, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think the big thing that, like, Black Legion has that probably all the other CSM factions don't have is just that versatility, like the ability to switch the Legion trait at any time on either Termes or Abaddon or something else. And then also just that sort of unexpected speed with, like, being able to advance and charge either the Termes or Abaddon at multiple points of the game with the Apostle, or flick on the no rerolls to hit, which really hurts a lot of armies at the moment. And then that Veilbreaker plate really just gives it the ability to either switch it up late or just to, like, jam the pressure on really early by putting the Termes right in your face. It's a little reliant on prayers and psychic powers and everything, but, you know, if you get those off, it's really something that I think a lot of armies currently aren't equipped to deal with. There's a lot of monophase armies I think we've gone back to after I think it was a bit more flexible in Nephilim. So I think this is a good sort of counter meta pick that could do a few things.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see how it goes and how they use it in pairings as well. Because, like, you're right, Nath, I definitely, and I'm probably, you know, on common ground with a lot of people, did not expect CSM to be on the roster for many teams. So that's super interesting. Luke, you had a bit of a list you want to talk about from a notorious player in New South Wales.
Yeah. So one thing that's been on my little list of armies that I like to play is the old Space. With the fall of Dark Angels recently, Space Wolves, what a time to bring them up to speed. So Chris Wright from New South Wales is running a very nice Space Wolves list. And basically it utilizes a captain on bike. It has some Warlord traits in there and Armor of Rust to fight last, a Primaris Chaplet on bike, which is giving buffs to some nearby units. It's got the Benediction of Fury for extra damage. And this Space Wolves successor chapter he's running is Whirlwind of Range and Born Heroes. So it's plus one to hit in combat when you charge or get charged, and exploding sixes to hit, which then stacks with the Space Wolves Super Doctrine, which is double exploding sixes on sixes to hit in combat. So pretty deadly combat units all across the board. Then he's got an Infiltrator Squad, Judicare, and then he's got a Scout Squad. And these Scouts recently, with the changes of free war gear for Space Marines, you can actually kit them up quite insanely. Like, you get essentially two Melter Guns and a Thunder Hammer for free. It's all for 60 points. And a free Plasma Pistol as well. So just, all that extra stuff for 60 points. They can forward deploy, so they get things like behind enemy lines, which is really good for Space Wolves because they struggle with a lot of secondary options. Then they've got some really, really key units, which are the Wolf Guard. Now, these boys, since they're kind of old Codex Marines, they can take a whole bunch of different war gear, and essentially war gear is free. So they're super cheap at 130 points for a five-man squad. With jump packs, all have combi melters and all have like lightning claws or a power fist in there. So they're just a really heavy trading unit that's super cheap. He's got two Wolfen, which just slap like a ton of bricks, and they fight on death as well. They're super cheap now too, at 145 points for five. And then the other one that's really like a really good unit, which you're starting to see in competitive play now, is the Sky Claws. Because they can take, I think it's up to three Melter Guns. They can take Storm Shields, Thunder Hammers, and Power Fists all for free. So 110 points for a squad of six Sky Claws, which is pretty insane. And then this is the kicker. So the new Desolation Marines that have come out are particularly potent with Space Wolves because you can run a 10-man squad, the 1 CP strat for keen sensors, which then allows them to ignore any or all hit roll modifiers or ballistic skill modifiers, so they can shoot out of line of sight and not care about the penalties to hit. And then you've got two guys in there that can hit on twos, which is pretty impressive. And then of course he's got the Long Fangs there, which are kind of a Space Wolf staple because you can take the Wolf Guard Terminator with a Thunder Hammer, Storm Shield, and Cyclone Missile Launcher. So they're pretty hard to kill at the end of the day.
Every time I see that unit, dude, it just reminds me of like a pack mule, like a little donkey with all the shit on it.
Yeah, it's just the Wolf Guard, mate. It's just the Wolf Guard tagging along. And he's, he stands at the front getting shot by everything.
These new Space Wolf Wizards honestly remind me a lot of 2021 Drukhari lists. I'm like, okay, is this the end of the list? Okay, is this the end of the list?
That's the thing, right? They're so cheap and they've got so much war gear for free. So, these Space Wolves lists really trade efficiently. And the reason they have so many trading lists as well is because the Space Wolves' secondary objective that's specific to them requires you to be, make charges. So it's super effective to run all these trading units. And when they hit in combat, they can take down like a baby knight on their own, each squad. So it's pretty, pretty strong. And there's an awesome Warlord trait in here on one of the bikers that allows him to advance and charge, and then everything within a 6-inch range of that Warlord that just made the charge can also advance and charge. So your whole army, just moves, 14 to 18 inches, advances and charge, slaps in combat, makes trades. Super potent list. Love it.
Yeah. The scary thing about that kind of list is not it all hitting you instantly, right? It's it all like creeping up slowly across the table. And you know that turn three is going to roll over and they're going to kick into assault dock with exploding sixes. And you just know it's going to like 20 Marines are going to be up your bum like instantly, and it sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem before with the Wolves list was that you had all these units that could set up and stage for the, you know, next turn and threat range, but you didn't really have much, you know, shooting units that put the pressure on that made you have to come forward and play the game. Mm. Now the Desolation Marines actually fills that role, so you have to actually play the game. Yeah. Because they really do a lot of damage, particularly with the Space Wolf strat. So it's, yeah, super potent.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, I'm keen to see how Chris goes. He's obviously on the cutting edge of the marine archetypes, like we saw at Uprising and things like that. So it'll be super cool to see how he travels. Yeah, I got a fun one to talk about. It depends on your definition of fun. So we've got a number of Tau players. I believe 6 or 7 of the teams are taking Tau. And there's a few, you know, interesting ones, some Tau Sept, some Farsight, a few Borkan and things like that. But the one ridiculous list is by our good friend Commander Hindsight, Michael Horton from WA. Yeah, it's something else, everyone. It's geared so hard. There's too many railguns, but yeah, we'll get into it. So it's a Tau Sept list. It's got a Cold Star Commander with Burst and the Super Combat Flamer. He's got the rerolls to hit and wound Warlord trait. And he's got the bit of war gear that he runs away if he's charged. He's got Long Strike. He's got 3 Hammerheads, 3 Devilfish, 2 Sunshark Bombers. So quite a number of vehicles. 3 Breacher units, a Pathfinder unit. And I believe 2 units of 5 Crude Hounds. Yeah, and then he's got a little Firesight Marksman that's got CP regen and the redeploy. So, yeah, like if this list gets a good table and is up against something that can't really screen against a big Tau Alpha, it's just going to run stuff over. Like, this is very reminiscent of 2022's Greek Tau list at WTC. And I know some of the Team Australia guys probably spent like 2/3 of the practice the week before trying to manage what the fuck they do against this Greek Tau list. So I'm really excited to see, like me and Michael have played before. We played at last year's ATC, and I'm keen to see how they use this list, whether it's going to be like a bit of a bully to reply to stuff, or if it's just going to be put up to snag lights tables. And I'm really interested to see how other teams actually pair into something like this. Because the conventional counters of things like, you know, like lists that are resilient to shooting can't really afford to cop like upwards of 15 mortal wounds a turn from the combo of the Hammerheads and the Pathfinders and the Bombers. Like, I don't quite think a lot of the lists that classically are good into Tau can cop that. So I'm super excited to see how this goes.
Can't score, bring it down if you're dead.
Well, that's it. Yeah, it gives up, what, 18 or 20 or something, bring it down. Doesn't matter if the enemy's dead.
Yeah. It's, I love to see the little Sunshark Bombers in there. Like, little flashback to last year, but obviously he's got to have some sort of plan for them that isn't sort of traditionally what we saw those Sunshark Bombers doing last year.
Yeah, well, it's a different kind of role they fill, right? Because they can't start on the board. They're like they're kind of like a second wave, if that makes sense. Like, it feels like you send stuff out or you prepare and then you bring them on while you hit with other stuff. So it's like, sure, these bombers die instantly, but I've got 10 more vehicles in your face. Like, can you deal with it all at once? And then they go for a bombing run, which is interesting.
Yeah, I hate those Sunshine Bombers.
Dude, yeah. You even, like, printed them for me and you're like, I fucking hate these. I don't know why. all right, Nathie, you got another one for us?
All right, I think I might swing it over to the Orcs from South Australia. Mike Caruana's running them. One of a few players actually running this one, but I thought there was a few pieces in tech in this one that I wanted to mention in particular. So sort of the Goth pressure list we're seeing sort of generally now, and we've seen a few of these come in for the ATC sub. He's got Gazgul, the man, the legend, as the warlord. He's got the war boss and war bike with the usual sort of smash boss, brutal but cunning, killer claw combo. Weird boy with Fist of Gork and Warpath. And he's got a mech with custom force field, which is actually really nice with the sort of upgraded war. So you've got the 5+ the invo that you get when you get the turn of war, but this sort of allows a second turn of the 5+ invo. Let's say the Orcs going second need to take a bunch of shooting or simply want to push out that 5+ invo mid-game. That works both in shooting and combat. So sort of you can take a punch on two key turns rather than one. He's got the 10 Beast Snagger Boys, the traditional 30 Gretchen for the auto 15 on Get the Good Bits. He's got some Mega Knobs, two squads of 5 Knobs with Power Claw, which is actually a nice sort of mini sort of Mega Knob squad that isn't quite as durable but is a little cheaper for similar Power Claw output. He's got the Squig Hog Boys. He's got probably what we're seeing in most lists, which is the 2x10 Storm Boys, which can just hop out of those transports and put the pressure on really hard. And then he's got a Kill Rig, a Battle Wagon, a Truck, and then a Knob on Smash Squig with Head Whoppers Kill Chopper, which is, I think, a really cool piece of tech that sort of lets you get the characters and sort of gets in little spots, given how that Smash Squig moves in the charge phase. Orcs score really well with Get the Good Bits, Green Tide, Stomping Good, and sort of just generally how they play on the primary, just putting pressure on. We see sort of a few variations throughout the few different teams, but I think Orcs are well placed to do quite well at this event.
Yeah, that's such an interesting bit of tech. We saw it at a few of, I think it was at Gladiator teams in March, Nate. A couple of the Orc lists had the KFF for that extra turn of Invo, which is pretty cool. And it's kind of interesting because Orcs like to kind of just force the pressure sometimes, right? And then you pop that with the WA turns, and it's just like an annoying amount of time that these Orcs are a bit more durable than they should be, which is cool.
Especially if there's a big scrap in the center, like getting two turns of 5+ in that 9-inch ore is really rough. And then you've got some other teams running sort of like Zagstruck for that little pinch hitter with the 21-inch move, or you've got people running Gazgul and sort of just a Beast Boss instead. So there's sort of some really cool takes. Keen to see how people play the Orc lists and how they use them in pairings, because I think they are scared of a couple of things, and some may need tables, some may not. So it'll be interesting to see how all these Orc lists are used by different teams.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And it's such a like nice surprise. I love seeing Orcs in the mix, to be honest. Like, they're such a fun army to play against as well. So,
100%.
But yeah, it'll be sick. Luke, you got another one for us, mate?
Yeah, I have one more, which is Jacob Tinning from New Zealand South. And basically, Jacob is running Harlequin and Eldari, a mix here. But basically, the craft world is actually Inari. So this is an interesting thing that people are doing lately, which is running Inari supplemented with a patrol of Harlequins, because you can still take the Harlequins in the Inari as Battle Brothers. And the characters are just really, really efficient in Harlequins. So I'll get to them at the end of the list. But basically, the list is Seer Council, two Farseers, and the Incarn. And they basically have a lot of powers to give things a 4-up imbo, get some CP, and do a bunch of mortal wounds in an AoE. And the Incarn is everybody's favorite tool to see on the tabletop, which makes you have to think of a whole new way to play the game, which is anytime something dies, it can teleport around the map. Then he's got two Rangers that can forward deploy, two Howling Banshee units with the usual tricks. He's got a squad of striking Scorpions. And in his fast attack, he's got an interesting Reaver squad with Hypex, which is a increasing movement speed combat drug. Mm-hmm. He's got the unit of Shining Spears, which is one of my favorite units. That's such a good unit. Pumps out a bunch of mortal wounds. Kind of expensive, but it's a really potent unit. Denise, you know about this unit, don't you?
Oh, God. I've had great and horrific experiences with this unit. It's come in and like cleaned up Longstrike in one hit in a game at Uprising against the lovely Greg. And it's also, you know, I've played Luke and I've overwatched with the Hammerhead and picked up the whole unit. So good and bad, but I fucking hate Shining Spears. The only thing I hate more than Shining Spears in this army, there's two things, actually. One of them is the Harlequin's character you're about to get to, but the other one's a goddamn Incarn. I'd be so happy if I can get through ANZ DC without fucking playing Inari.
Yeah. So good. Then it's got two Shroudrunner units, and these things are just great alpha strike, and also get you behind enemy lines quite early. Here's the Warp Spider unit, which also has Web of Deceit, which after it shoots, it can then teleport around the map.
Oh, that's amazing.
And a good little tool, which I think is quite valuable in some of these Inari lists, it sometimes swings, sometimes, you know, does nothing, but it's the support weapons with D cannons, just three of them. And they really help Eldar take out the big, you know, units with high toughness, high wounds, like knights and whatnot. And then he's got the a Dark Deeds patrol of Harlequins, one with the Troop Master, which with Foot in the Future, which this guy's kind of like an auto attack in a lot of things. He's got Sigarax Rose and Queen of Shards. Can't remember what Queen of Shards is, but basically this guy just gets out. On this case, he doesn't get out of transport, but he can move a bunch and auto charges 6 plus D6. So he just makes crazy distance across the map. He's got a player squad, and then also everybody's favorite friend to see in Harlequin's list is the Death Jester, which has the favor of Sigarak. And then it's also got the Harvester of Torment upgrade. So these Death Jesters, you'll see them a lot in a lot of these lists, but basically there's two variants. One is exploding sixes to hit, explode three times, and another one is any four up to wound does a mortal wound in addition. And these are really, really good because they can target characters, and essentially they just force any opponent to really consider bringing their characters out in the open, because this thing will definitely put it, you know, at a 50% chance roughly of killing your five wound characters. And it's so stressful to play against because you're like, I shouldn't be worrying about this, but I am, because this, you know, 100 point model.
I've had Tau commanders with two drones just die to these things. Like, I thought I was good. I clearly wasn't good.
Yeah, because, you know, it just swings. Sometimes it just swings, and then you're like, okay, that's cool. So, yeah, the favor of Sigarak allows you to swap. After you've rolled dice, you can swap the dice to a six. Mm-hmm. And this allows you to pop off your either exploding sixes to hit or your extra mortal wounds on wounding. And it's a two damage gun, so it just forces you to, you know, really consider your five wound characters or your commanders, apparently.
Well, honestly,
as if you didn't need to turn on your...
Sorry, Nathan, you go.
All good. As if you didn't need to turn on your brain enough against the Yin Khan. Like, you've got the DJ running around, you've got all these little units that are so fast and so damaging.
Mm.
Well, I was going to say, like, even against a squad of, like, 5 1 or 2 win models, that Death Jester just pops off, right? It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Just picks up small things. But yeah, this list is really, like, really kind of well constructed, because it's got all these, like, really light units that can forward deploy, move fast, get behind enemy lines, and then you got the Incarn that can teleport to all these units that easily die. So it's just kind of a lot to think about, I guess, when you're playing it.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. Like, when you've got all these little, like, pieces that are moving around, it's another layer of stuff to think about as the opponent when you're playing it. Like, you don't quite know where the Incarn's going. Like, the classic thing, Luke, that we used to talk about is Yunari lists with a Wave Serpent and Banshee units, because, like, the Banshees would run out, charge something, make it fight last. The Incarn would charge something, kill it, or nearly kill it, or do enough damage. The Banshees would finish off something small, and the Incarn would teleport back to safety to the Banshee. And you could pretty much do that for a couple of turns.
Yeah, exactly. And usually, like, I mean, when I played lists like this, the Banshees would be more of a defensive tool, whereas in most other Eldar lists, the Banshees are an offensive tool.
Yeah.
So you'd use the Banshees to, like, charge something in the backfield and then securely or safely get your Incarn out of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, and the support weapons can even win sort of, like, the fights against Desolator and Marines. Like, they can sit a little further back, so they're actually quite dangerous sort of out of line of sight tech as well.
Oh, 100%. They, yeah, the AP is still surprisingly pretty scary on them, even with the indirect changes. So that's crazy. Speaking of Desolation Marines, I got a fun one from South Australia, Mr. Phil Wessels, with Iron Hands. We've got a couple of Iron Hands lists floating around, but this one scares the pants off me. So it's got the compulsory Desos, but we've got a badass Tech Marine, a couple of infill units, and then quite a number of Dreadnoughts. We've got 3 Redemptors. The Relic Contemptor, that's the character Chad, Little March of the Ancients. A couple of Landspeeders, a Landspeeder Storm with some scouts, and then a drop pod. We've got 2 dev units, and then the fully kitted 10-man of Desolation Marines. And some servitors for good measure. So if you imagine this on the table, you've got a couple of infill units zoning out, you've got some speeders rolling around doing a bit of damage and moving some scouts around. You've got likely, you know, devs in the drop pod, Desos in the backfield, and then 3 Redemptors just to hang out at the back as well. So I don't really know, like this list doesn't give up a whole heap of stuff. It gives up like 11 Bring It Down, but honestly, there's a lot coming at you with this Iron Hands list, and especially with the ability to just stay perma in dev doc for everything to pop off hard. I I think it'll do really well. What do you guys think?
I really like the mix on the Devastator squad. So it's got two multis, two grabs on each. So it's sort of kitted for any sort of versatility, depending on how he uses it. Obviously, the Desolation squad's terrifying, especially in Iron Hands. And then that March of the Ancients, Relic Contemptor, I just hope I don't have to see it across the table myself, because something that puts out that much hurt being character protected is a little gross for my taste.
Yeah, and I believe it's got the Exploding Sixes on it. I'll have to double check. But, oh my goodness, bro. Like,
no, thank you.
Yeah, get off my lawn. Get off my lawn.
It's crazy seeing all those Desolation squads just coming out of the woodworks, eh?
Oh, man, it's, yeah. And I'll be, the thing I'd be keen to see is, like, there's a couple of marine factions, like you touched on with the Space Wolves, Luke, that can get around some of the inherent disadvantages of indirect, like the Ballistic Seal Change, and, like, a lot of the WTC tables have a lot of dents in the midboard. While you've got this one, the Iron Hands one, that doesn't quite do that, but it has just passive rerolls of one and stuff sitting around. So, like, I'd wonder if they use this as a put up to snag, like, the Ruin and Crate only table that's got no dents on it and just blow people away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and some, as you said, some can get around it. So we saw, like, the Dark Angels getting around it with the Steny Sybil plus one to hit.
Yes.
And now, you know, now that the Transhuman, Permatranshuman is fading away, you're moving to other things like Space Wolves, so they can kind of ignore the negatives to hit. And yeah, Iron Hands with the real one. So there's a lot of ways to get around it.
Oh yeah, 100%. Nathan, did you have one more list to talk about before we wrap up, mate?
Yeah, I'll talk about one more. So I think the big sort of survivor of the data slate that we saw recently was demons just stuck themselves behind cover and didn't get any little light touches despite a pretty good win rate. So we've actually seen demons probably, I'd say, in almost every team for the ATC, and I think we're seeing a combination between a certain specific build with, like, Tzeentch demons, which is good for its specific role, but also a lot of sort of single styles demons lists that we've seen probably the last 6 months or so. And I'll point out a pretty good example of that from a really good player from NZ North, Finn Decker. Geordie of our podcast actually had the pleasure of playing Finn down in Adelaide, which he said was his favourite game down there. So Finn's gone with double big boy in an undivided demons list with Scarbrand and everyone's favourite face-capped Bloodthirster with the King of Blades. He's got a Fate Skimmer and a Transweaver, just Transweaver, I imagine, for some psychic ritual shenanigans, and Fate Skimmer for some teleporting Tzeentch psychic stuff. He's got 40 demonettes, which is, you know, about average intake for all these undivided demons listed ANZTC. They are, I think they've sort of emerged as the best demon troop, given the amount of damage they can put up and all the different little strats they have access to. Three Nurglings for the sort of forward deploy tech and 10 Pink Horrors. Good little sturdy unit with their resistance to shooting. He's got 2x4... two by three fiends, three flamers, and then 2x5 flesh hounds. So just a lot of little units here, which is like a lot of good tech pieces in terms of either combat or psychic resistance or sort of being able to play the mission. And then sort of the list is built around that sort of Bloodthirster and Scarbrand. And I think Scarbrand can cause a lot of problems for people if they're not careful and they're not playing on their game, given sort of his access to no fallback tech and extra output in combat and sort of just the output that him and the Bloodthirster have themselves. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how NZ North uses not only this list, but how other teams use sort of their undivided demons list in pairings, given they have like great scoring from Reality Rebels and just general great primary trading.
Yeah, it's pretty full on. Like the demons have definitely gone like this style of undivided demons or hard skew into like the Tzeentch, which is doing quite well in Europe at the moment. So I'm Nathan, for the ignorant and uneducated like me, can you tell us why demonettes are like a bit more favored than some of the other lesser demons? Is it just a points thing, or is it because they move fast and hit hard? Is it the interaction with Scarbrand?
So they're probably 10 part. I think they're about 10 points cheaper than Bloodletters, which I think we saw a little bit more play initially. And there are some Bloodletters kicking around here, but I think Demonette's having access to the reroll hits from their strat there, given that they just have a ton of, I think it's about 40 AP1 attacks that spike up to AP3 or AP4. I can't quite recall. But like they can just put out a lot of hurt on their own. And then they have a lot of good access to sort of the different warp swarm tech with extra neg one leadership or better charging or just a lot of the demonet stuff that they can do. And then just like the offensive output, I think, into a lot of, you know, standard stuff that we're seeing in the meta, I think, is sort of shone the best.
Yeah.
Mm. Particularly they have the Transweaver as well. So the Hysterical Frenzy, I think, is an extra attack on demonets and then sixes to hit explode. So yeah, it's just ridiculous amount of attacks. And it ends up being like 54 attacks or something like that.
Wow. That gets them to like 60 plus near Skarbrand, hey?
Yeah, it's just mental. So the combo, yeah, definitely is the Demonettes and the Skarbrand. And then also because they're low strength, I find they don't get as affected by a lot of the defensive strats, like Transhuman and whatnot, because you're already either wounding on fours or fives, but it's all about just weight of dice rather than...
And it's all damage one as well, so like it's not like the Bloodletters where hitting neg one damage is really going to hurt them a lot.
Yeah, exactly. They're just crazy, crazy units.
Yeah, that's pretty full on, and being obsec troops on top of that is pretty lit.
Mm-hmm.
Look, that pretty much takes us to the end, guys. Any other lists you boys want to cover? We want to kind of the aim of today, I guess, was to not go into everyone's secret tech, but just highlight some fun, cool things. Anything else you guys want to go through?
Just a general like overview of looking through all the lists. What do you guys think of the kind of like the list design from most? Like overall in general, because I found going through them compared to previous teams events, I would find previous teams events a lot more skewed lists, like, you know, all vehicles or all of one type of thing or just saturation of bodies. How do you guys think this is going?
You want to take this one, Nathan?
I think honestly, like how teams events have gone sort of last sort of year or so of ninth, we're seeing a lot more sort of lists that can be successful in singles. Maybe there's a little bit of skew, but it's more just using those different archetypes that either people are familiar with or things built specifically to counter archetypes that we see in the meta. Like, so for instance, like, you know, we see the GSC being brought into responsible a lot of stuff last year, and now it's its own big meta thing. And then we're seeing Guard and a few other things like that. And I think there's been a few tech choices from people to try and counter that in turn. So I think it's sort of people trying to outmaneuver each other on builds themselves rather than sort of skewing into certain types of units. Because I think with 8-man's pairings, like if you're there can be a lot less control and you've got to be willing to play a lot of different types of things. So I think skewing hard into, you know, all vehicles or mega horde or something like that, I think if it can't play the mission in a lot of different scenarios, I think it's going to be caught out.
Yeah, exactly. I think you bring up a great point. The way the game plays now, it's much less easy to just build those skew lists, because when you think about our last ones, it'd be like either ITC scoring where it's like hold more, kill more, and then pick three of the secondaries that you could build your list around sort of thing. Whereas now there's kind of like you have to play primary and the secondaries force you to engage.
Well, yeah, it's definitely like a primary focused like win mechanic, right? Like you can win without having amazing secondaries, but you can't really win a game by not participating in the primary, right? Like at some point you need to kind of participate or take your opponent off. Like you can't just let your opponent get the 45. And like Nathan hit the nail on the head where these skew lists are great. But if you have to constantly protect the skew list, then that makes it harder for the team comp, right? So unless the whole team's sure. like I know with our Mercs lineup, we've skewed certain things a certain way to kind of push a certain archetype of people among our whole lineup. If you just have one person doing it, sometimes it becomes actually more of a liability than actually gets you anywhere. So it's interesting. And like, how crazy has this edition been in terms of the quick updates and the new stuff coming out constantly? I think it's harder to kind of, when something floats to the top, it's just known as top rather than there's no massive period of time to solve things over months and months and months, right? Like we had a week turnaround between the data slate and list sub, or less than that.
Yeah.
So, or like 3 or 4 days, something like that. So it's full on.
RIP everyone's guard banner and Deathwing Terminators.
Suck a fat one, Finian.
Which I think we would have seen a lot more of had that data slate not dropped in the way that it had.
I'm very happy that changed because I wasn't looking forward to reading like every team with 50 Terminators in there.
Yeah.
Is there a faction that we think everyone thinks might do well that, you know, that we've seen a lot of that we maybe haven't touched on so far?
I think the two Votann lists out of Queensland will surprise some people, mate.
I also think Tau's going to rise up a little bit more because I think the Dark Angels was a little bit harder for them to deal with.
There are definitely GSC. Oh, fuck. Yeah, GSC, Nathan. Oh, my God.
Yeah, GSC, who get through scot-free yet again.
Still winning the information war, even though their codex has been out for 18 months.
It's like players couldn't find a way to weaponize the codex for 6 months, and GW has not realized it's been weaponized for another 6 months. So we've just had this like weird period of domination of GSC. It's off the chain.
Eric's just smiling the entire time.
Oh, laughs in oppression. Oh my God. All right, guys. I already know the answer to this question, but who's going to be on the podium? Who's going to surprise you, and who do you think might not do as well as... I won't even ask that question. Who's going to surprise you?
Who's going to surprise? Mate, Queensland Mercs. Come on, every time.
I'll say I think New South is poised to do very well this year, although I do think it will be a Queensland team at the top of the podium still.
Yeah, I think... It's going to be like it's a bit of Red Bull Racing in F1 right now, isn't it, with Queensland? But I think the Queensland boys, like the main team, are fit and firing. Like, it'd be super interesting if another state can get up there and get the win or get the draw on them. But honestly, I think the main team's got it. And I'm really, like me personally, I'm super keen to see what Taz does. I'm super keen to see what New South does. I know New South really is hungry and they've been training really hard. So that'll be cool. And I'm also very excited to have New Zealand teams in this year, the North and South team. I'm so excited. I hope we get the chance to play.
Yeah. What a great show.
Would this be the biggest ANZTC we've had so far, Zane?
Definitely the biggest that like we've been to since like 2018, for sure, man. 10 teams or something.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be super cool. So, if you guys want more info, if you're listeners and your subscribers, you can look up the ANZTC or ANZ Team Champs on BCP. Have a look at the lists if you're a subscriber. And definitely look out for our coverage post-event, guys. But I guess that's really it. You'll hear a bit from us in the following weeks as we lead up to it, and you'll definitely hear the results of the event when it's done. So thank you for listening in. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like what you heard, give us a like on Facebook and subscribe to us on iTunes. It does help new listeners find us. Thank you, Luke and Nathan, for coming on and shooting the shit with the lists. It's always a pleasure. Anything you guys want to say before we finish up?
Just good luck to everybody going, and make sure you have a lot of fun.
Yeah, super excited. Personally, this was my sort of goal the last couple of years, to be able to do it on the Mercs team is sort of pinnacle of my hobby journey so far, so I'm super excited.
Fuck yeah, man. And we're going to have a good time on pairing, so it'll be great. I'll give you a lot of purples, mate. Don't worry.
Absolutely. Full Excel spec.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for your joining us this fine evening, and take it easy. See you next time.